Oh, good morning. I want to talk with you this morning about contempt. The reason that I want to talk to you about contempt is because I listened to a book called Blink. I drove a lot this week. Got through it about 1.25 times. So, anyway. The subtitle is The Power of Thinking Without Thinking. So it's about your subconscious mind. I want to start with the definitions of contempt. Definition. And I have that here somewhere. Here we are. Contempt. The feeling with which a person regards anything considered mean, vile, worthless, disdain, or scorn is also very closely related to despise, which in the Bible it is most of the time translated as despise, to regard with contempt or disdain or loathe. And since I was well, what's the opposite of contempt? And I was surprised. I listened all the way through the book and studied for hours, and then finally it occurred to me, well, I wonder what the opposite of contempt is. And so I looked that up, but I thought it would help with the lesson here if we got that out of the way first. And the opposite of contempt is respect. I'm always talking about respect with taekwondo and that kind of stuff. And it just kind of struck me as I hadn't thought of it. So, and the meaning for respect is admiration for a sense. All right, that doesn't make sense. Admiration for a sense of the worth or excellence of a person, privileged position, and the condition of being esteemed or honored. So you can see how those are opposites. One of them is, think of the body language that comes with both of those. When you say contempt, the guy in here says one of the body languages is rolling the eyes. It's like, and the chin goes up. And when you respect somebody, what do? When you're paying respects to somebody, you might nod at them. You know, it's about the opposite. Your eyes go down, perhaps, and you're nodding your head, you know, bowing to them or shaking the hand. You're reaching forward. You're not pulling away. So I can see how they are opposites. Okay, that's all. So, I want to start with Psalms 119. Be reading the whole. No. We'll just read a few verses. Actually, the same verses that Matt read last Sunday, 17 through 24. Pay attention, particular attention to verse 22. Do good to your servant, and I will live. I will obey your word. Open my eyes that I may see wonderful things in your law. I am a stranger on earth. Do not hide your commands from me. My soul is consumed with longing for your laws at all times. You rebuke the arrogant who are cursed and who stray from your commands. Remove from me scorn and contempt, for I keep your statutes. Though rulers sit together and slander me, your servant will meditate on your decrees. Your statutes are my delight. They are my counselors. I thought we should start off on a positive note with a negative thing. So this was chapter 22. The one line says, remove from me scorn and contempt. So what's this person doing? He's reaching out. He's asking for God's help and serving him, and he is doing the opposite of contempt. He's he's showing respect and honor to God. Okay. So I listened to this book, and the contempt part is a very small part of it, actually. But it struck me. This guy, John Gotham, is not the author. It's somebody that the author was writing about. Said he can take couples into his office. He has these two office chairs sitting up on platforms with gigameters. You know, like how much you wiggle. They measure that. Okay. Gigalometers or something like that they were called. And then they put monitors on them how much they were sweating and how their heart rate was. And they were told for 20 minutes they were to sit there. They're about 5 feet apart from each other, out of striking distance. And they were supposed to talk about something that was contentious in their marriage. 20 minutes, and it was videotaped. That's also important. It was videotaped. And then there was nobody else in the room. And so they talked for 20 minutes, and then this guy's special team would come in, and they would divide that video, 20-minute video, up into 6-second intervals, and for man and wife, and they would analyze, you know, with all the data they had and all this stuff, and put numbers, it was 900 numbers for each person. And it all, you know, they were like single-digit, two-digit meanings, so they weren't big numbers. But anyway, they did that, and this guy could predict with 85% of being right of if they'd be divorced in the future. 15 years or whatever. And I thought Joy's comment was, because they don't go into this, Joy's comment was, well, yeah, if somebody tells you you're going to get divorced, I mean, that's like hanging an albatross around your neck for sure. But I'm not sure how they handled that side of it. They didn't go into that. I don't know if they went over it with the couples. But anyway, they analyzed all this stuff. All this information. And so the author of the book, he got a 35 minutes worth of videos of couples, and he tried it at home, thought, hey, I'm gonna do this, because he sat through the process, you know, the process, and he had all the, you know, the notes and what the numbers were and the negative and the positive and all this stuff. And he says I watched those, and says I got 5 of them out of 10 couples. Says I might as well just have flipped the coin. Says I would have done just as well. He says it was so overwhelming. There was too much information. And, you know, he wasn't trained. He wasn't trained in it. So, anyway, he went back and talked with this guy. And the guy says, you can't. Every marriage has a rhythm to it. And it has to have a 5-to-1 ratio of positive emotion to negative emotion, or else it's not going to make it. And it's a kind of a signature. And it, Morse code. And during World War II, the English could tell. They monitored all the German Morse code people, and they actually could figure out. They had like relationships with these guys because they could tell through Morse code. The spaces were bigger for Oscar. They even gave him names and all this stuff, and they could tell Oscar's with this tank division. Well, Oscar is in Italy now, and now he's in, you know, so they could tell where troop movements were going, and all they heard was beep, 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 beep. That's all they heard. And but there was a rhythm to it, and they could tell where this person was and what operator and who he was in his group. So this guy's saying marriages are like that. This guy can look at marriages, even in restaurants. He says he does this in restaurants. He'll sit next to a couple, and he says he can tell if their marriage is in trouble or not, just by them talking about their kids and just everyday stuff. And that's what struck me, was that's what this whole book is about, is everyday stuff. You can take that And your subconscious mind comes through that, your emotions and your all that stuff. And so you can take something that doesn't seem to matter for much of anything and analyze it, and you can figure out other parts of your life that you're having trouble in. So, yeah. So anyway, if you have, heart rate and sweat and a video that you can stop and analyze. Yeah, so it's not as easy as just sitting there and watching somebody. So it's not like that. Anyway, this guy said the fourth horseman that he looked for in the restaurant setting was, or any of the others, was defensiveness, stonewalling, which I think is, you know, in my mind, they're almost all the same thing. And then criticism, and the most important one was contempt. He says those four things are very, very hard on the marriage. And contempt being the most important one. So his definition of contempt was any statement made from a higher plane trying to put the other in on a lower level. So it's insulting, swearing at somebody, calling them names, that type of thing, and putting them down. And it's closely related to disgust. So how do you react to something like, oh, that diaper is nasty? Look at that diaper is nasty. You know, you don't get closer to it. You get further away from it. You withdraw from it. So what relationship, any relationship, it doesn't have to be marriage, our relationship with God, our relationship with our bosses or whatever. I mean, if you have contempt in that relationship, it's not going to last long. It may last long, but it's going to feel even longer. So it's not going to be good. So let's go to Isaiah chapter 5. I got to kind of see what God thinks about this. Isaiah 5, 21 through 25. And this one I'm going to read out of King James. 21 through 25. Woe unto them that are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. Woe unto them that are mighty to drink wine and men of strength to mingle strong drink, which justify the wicked for reward and take away the righteousness of the righteous from him. Therefore, as the fire devoureth the stubble and the flame consumeth the chaff, so their root shall be as rottenness and their blossoms shall go up as dust. Because they have cast away the law of the Lord of hosts and despised the word of the Holy One of Israel. Therefore is the anger of the Lord kindled against his people, and he hath stretched forth his hand against them and hath smitten them, and the hills did tremble, and their carcasses were torn in the midst of the streets. I guess I didn't finish it. For all this, his anger is not turned away, but his hand is stretched out still. So, God doesn't like. I mean, why would God like contempt? I mean, he's not going to, because it's the opposite of respect. And what are we made for? We are made to respect God. So, contempt is not going to sit very well with God. And flipping over to chapter 65 of Isaiah, verses 2 through 5. This will be NIV. All day long I have held out my hands to an obstinate people who walk in ways not good, pursuing their own imaginations, a people who continually provoke me to my very face, offering sacrifices in gardens and burning incense on altars of brick, who sit among the graves and spend their nights keeping secret vigil, who eat the flesh of pigs, and whose pots hold broth of unclean meat, who say, keep away, do not come near me, for I am too sacred for you. Such people are smoke in my nostrils and a fire that keeps burning all day. See here, God doesn't. That holier than thou, actually I read that somewhere, maybe we'll come across it later, but There's actually a verse that says that, and I didn't know that that actually existed, but it was kind of neat to find. But keep away, don't come near me, for I am too sacred for you. That is contempt. Contempt. So you can see that, and you can see how a relationship can't handle that. I mean, think of two people trying to work together, and one of them, at least one of them, is just can't stand the other one. How long is that relationship going to last? It's not going to last very long at all. And so, one of the things that impressed me with this book was the one couple that they kind of brought into the book was a young couple. They hadn't been married. They hadn't been married very long. They even used the term that they were still in the glowy stage. And they took this test, and they didn't do very well on it. And said that the woman was the one that had the contempt in this case. And they were a great couple. I mean, everybody who met them on the street thought they were great and all this stuff. So this thing, this stuff kind of, it's very small at the beginning, and it kind of creeps in, and it grows and becomes bigger. So it's not usually all out disrespect in the very first part. It's something that grows and festers. Okay, Ephesians 6. Ephesians 6, 8 through 9. No, that's not right. I want to read more than that. Start in verse 5. Okay, this is how God wants us to be. This is how we should be. This is how this is the good side. Slaves, obey your earthly masters with respect and fear and with sincerity of heart, just as you would obey Christ. Obey them not only to win their favor when their eye is on you, but like slaves of Christ, doing the will of God from your heart. Serve wholeheartedly as if you were serving the Lord, not men. Because you know that the Lord will reward everyone for whatever good he does, whether he is slave or free. And masters, treat your slaves in the same way. Do not threaten them, since you know that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and there is no favoritism with him. See, here we have, I mean, we've gone over this over and over and over again, even this morning. We've gone over this, and but contempt can go both ways. I mean, it can go. It does it. That's what he said. The analyzer guy said of the four horsemen. He said stonewalling is generally done by the males. Males tend to be the ones that do that, and the criticism tends to be done by the females. But he says with contempt, it doesn't make any difference. He says contempt is equally done by both sides. He says both sides can do that. So it doesn't matter if you're the slave or the master, you can have contempt. And a Christian is not to have that contempt for, say, in our world, maybe homeless people. We're not to have contempt for homeless people. And homeless people or somebody who's not very well off and a Christian should not have contempt for somebody who's wrong in it, I guess, as we say. So we need your social status should not have anything to do with whether you are allowed to have contempt or not. Contempt is not a good thing. So, let's go to a good example of how contempt was handled. In 1 Samuel. And I was happy to find this one, because Saul doesn't get very many points. So, We will go with Saul as a good example here. 1 Samuel chapter 10. As you'll notice, it is at the very beginning of his career. 1 Samuel chapter 10. And this is, he's just been appointed king. Samuel has just drug him out of the baggage and brought him before the people and said, "This is your king." And so, can you imagine? This is your king. We just drug him out of the closet. Do you think there might be a little contempt going on? Maybe. Okay. Now let's see here. Verse 27. It says, "But some of the troublemakers said, 'How can this fellow save us?' They despised him and brought him no gifts. But Saul kept silent." Now, granted, this may be a personality thing with Saul, the keeping silent, but in this case, it paid off. Because if you read the next chapter, the men of Jabesh basically are being bullied, and their salvation is to have their eyes put out and, you know, basically tortured, and says, "If you'll let us do this and abuse you, then we'll leave you alone this time." And they sent out a message, and Saul got the message and reacted very strongly and sent pieces of an ox and says to all the Israelites and said, "If you don't respond and come to me ready to fight, then you will look like this piece of ox." So he responded very well. And his people came through. Okay, I got carried away in the story there. Okay, let's go to leave your finger in Samuel, and let's go to 1 Thessalonians. And I always like to tie it back to the New Testament because we live in the New Testament, so. Okay, 1 Thessalonians 4:11-12. "Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your hands, just as we told you, so that your daily life may win the respect of outsiders, and so that you will not be dependent on anybody." Okay, yeah, that's all I wanted to read. So, you see here, this is what Saul did. This is very hard for somebody in a position of power to do, which George Washington was able to do, and which we need George Washington back. But anyway, they said he would never be able to serve as a president and then turn his back on it and go back to farming. And, well, I'm very thankful he was able to do that. And that's kind of the way Saul started. Saul started that way. He was appointed king and kind of said, "Okay," and went back to his fields and was farming. And then when he had an occasion to be the king, he rose to the occasion and did it. And then it sort of deteriorated from there. But you know, that's human nature. We are not... we are humans, but we are fighting human nature. And so that's why we, like 1 Thessalonians, make it your ambition to lead a quiet and work with quiet life and work with your hands. And so that's what we need to do. Not show the contempt for others around us. Okay, back to 1 Samuel, which I had. we're going to go to chapter 25. And we're going to go to a situation where it wasn't quite handled just right, but ended up being okay. First Samuel. Oh, all right. Sorry, I forgot to make my point. My point with Saul is Saul didn't get upset by the contempt, okay? He kind of let it roll off of him. And then he just kept doing his job, his daily work, his daily deeds. And he did them right. At this point in his kingship, he was performing correctly. And he did them right. And so the people responded well to him. Or he was doing the king's job well. And so that paid off. And the contempt was proven to be not right or not correct. Okay, now we go to chapter 25. This is a story of David and Nabal. This is before David was king. He's running from Saul and basically a gang member, leader, whatever. And anyway, so he protected Nabal's flocks and made sure he came to no harm. And he sent some men to them. And then let's see, it's sort of here in verse 10. Nabal answered David's servants, "Who is this David? Who is this son of Jesse?" See, that's contempt. Okay, he's putting David down on a lower level, insulting his father. I mean, he's just building up, escalating here. "Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. Why should I take my bread and water and meat and the meat I have slaughtered for my shears and give it to men coming from who knows where?" Acting like he doesn't even know who he is. David's men turned around and went back. When they arrived, they reported every word. David said to his men, "Put on your swords." So they put on their swords, and David put on his. About 400 men went up with David, while 200 stayed with the supplies. One of the servants told Nabal's wife, Abigail, "David sent messengers from the desert to give our master his greeting, but he hurled insults at them. Yet these men were very good to us. They did not mistreat us, and the whole time we were out in the fields near them, nothing was missing. Night and day they were a wall around us all the time we were herding our sheep near them. Now think it over and see what you can do, because disaster is hanging over our master and his whole household. He is such a wicked man that no one can talk to him." And Abigail lost no time. She took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 dressed sheep, 5 seahs of roasted grain, 100 cakes of raisins, and 200 cakes of pressed figs, and loaded them on donkeys. Then she told her servants, "Go on ahead, I'll follow you." But she did not tell her husband Nabal. As she came riding her donkey into a mountain ravine, there were David and his men descending toward her, and she met them. David had just said, "It's been useless, all my watching over this fellow's property in the desert, so that nothing of his was missing. He has paid me back evil for good. May God deal with David, be it ever so severely, if by morning I leave alive one male of all who belong to him." When Abigail saw David, she quickly got off her donkey and bowed down before David with her face to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, "My lord, let the blame be on me alone. Please let your servant speak to you. Hear what your servant has to say. May my lord pay no attention to that wicked man Nabal. He is just like his name. His name is Fool, and folly goes with him. But as for me, your servant, I did not see the men my master sent." That's probably good enough. See here, Nabal was showing contempt, insulting and drawing away. The relationship was definitely broken. And David responded in a typical military type of fashion. He says, "Come on, guys, we're going to go kill him." And so they loaded up and headed out, and Abigail, well, Nabal had some good servants who knew what was going on and went to Abigail. And Abigail jumped right in there, and she was respectful. She sent a gift, and then she, what's it say? She quickly got off her donkey. So she left her escape mechanism, okay? She could have turned and tried to run, you know, and gotten out of there. But no, she left her position of power on her donkey and got on the ground and bowed down to the ground before David with her face to the ground. I mean, that's showing respect. That's showing honor to David. And it worked, didn't it? The relationship was patched, we'll say. It was patched. And if you read on, well, anyway, we're not going to read on. So, but I'm going to go to where are we going here? 1 Peter 3. You know, when I started getting this lesson, I thought, wow, this is new stuff. This is something cool. You know, contempt. I don't use the word contempt very often. And the more I got into this, like, I think I've already given this lesson, actually. So, anyway, here we are. But so, 1 Peter 3, 1 through 12. And pay a particular attention to verse 7. And think of Abigail, okay? Because I thought this was an interesting pairing with that one, because it seems a little contradictory at first. Wives, in the same way, be submissive to your husbands, so that if any of them do not believe the word, they may be won over without word by the behavior of their wives. When they see the purity and reverence of your lives, your beauty should not come from outward adornment, such as braided hair and the wearing of gold jewelry and fine clothes. Instead, it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women of the past who put their hope in God used to make themselves beautiful. They were submissive to their own husbands, like Sarah, who obeyed Abraham and called him her master. You are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear. Verse 7. Husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partner and as heirs with you of the precious gift of life, so that nothing will hinder your prayers. Finally, all of you, live in harmony with one another. Be sympathetic. Love as brothers. Be compassionate and humble. Do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult, but with blessing. Because to this you are called, so that you may inherit a blessing. For whoever would love life and see good days must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from deceitful speech. He must turn from evil and do good. He must seek peace and pursue it. For the eyes of the Lord are on the righteous, and his ears are attentive to their prayers. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil. At first, when I tried to pair this with Abigail, I thought, she wasn't very submissive to her husband. And then I got thinking, well, he did live longer than he was going to live. Howbeit, it wasn't a coma, but he did live longer. Because David was planning on killing him that night. So she did do him good. She did do him good. Yeah. So that's how I kind of worked that out in my mind, anyway. So, but I mean, it would have, even if he wouldn't have gone in the coma, and he would have lived another 20 years, it would have been better for him. right? I mean, he would have... She was taking care of him, even though he was a fool, as she said. So, and then verse 7. I like that. I mean, I don't want you to think this is, since I'm using Abigail and all that, this is all about women. But it's the husbands, in the same way, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect. I mean, think of somebody with contempt. It's like, finally, all of you live in contempt with one another and be sympathetic doesn't fit. Love, nope, that doesn't fit. Compassion, nope, and nope. Okay. It doesn't work. You put contempt in there and it doesn't work. It's not, none of it's going to work. So, I guess the point of my lesson is, and the point of this whole thing is I find contempt in myself, okay? There's certain things that just, I guess, irritate me, and I just have contempt for it, you know? And that's not right. Not even a little bit, because it will fester, okay? So, and especially in a marriage, because, I mean, think of the verses. You're supposed to be closest to that person. You're supposed to have the most, the intimate bond, the most, there's not room for defensiveness. There's not room for stonewalling. There's not, I mean, if the males are good at the stonewalling, and I think I'm fairly good at it, so, you know, I start building up this wall, you know, and, well, that's, Joy's on the other side of that wall, right? If she's on the other side of the wall, it's not called stonewalling. It's called protection, you know? And, you know, if she's on the other side, then it's called stonewalling, you know? It's protection against her. And that's not going to work. So if I'm contemptuous towards her, that's not going to work. If I'm defensive towards her, that's not going to work. And I forgot what the fourth one was. Criticism. Yes. If, you know, criticism has a good component to it. Defensiveness has a good component to it. Stonewalling, I suppose, the protection is good. You know, you protect yourself from certain things. I stonewall against contempt, maybe. So, there's certain aspects that are good about that. Contemptuous towards sin, I guess. I haven't thought about that till just this second. So, but, you know, I suppose there's good points in all these things, but you got to keep them aimed in the right direction. Okay? And there's no room for them in your relationships, because they're going to get in the way. So, anyway, so back to that song. Remove, I can't remember. I didn't intend to go back to it. Remove from me scorn and contempt. That's a good thing. And that's one of my new goals. So, and I hope you guys pick it up as well. So, those are my thoughts for this morning. If there's anybody who, for any reason, we have the potential to be the best group of people you've ever met. I guess I should say. Because we have the best boss there ever was. And that's God. And we're trying very hard to be like Him. And if you've made mistakes, changed your mind, want to come back, want to make that public and ask for that help or guidance or whatever, or if you're joining for the first time, we will do everything we can to help you. So if you come forward as we stand, sing the closing song.